Welcome to the Running Our Mouths podcast from Leuven, Belgium, where I'm joined by Joe Stillen, member of the Zap Fitness crew. Joe, how's it going?
It's going well, Chris. Hi. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Just out here for my second time in Europe for the summer. Now, I understand this is your third time. I think when I was here 2 years ago, it was also your first time. What have those 3 years been like, and how different is this third year?
Oh, this year is actually the longest I'll be here in Leuven. I'll be here a full month, and every time I come over, it seems I stay a little bit longer and do a few more races. I think the first year was 3 races, last year was 4, and I'm doing 5 here this time around. So it's always really fun to migrate here to Leuven, kind of like a Canada goose or something, and descend upon the locals. We're not really sure if they enjoy our American presence or not, but they always treat us well, and Belgium's a great place to base.
Now, before we talk a little bit more about Europe, I want to talk about Zap Fitness for a bit. I mean, how's that transition been? I mean, 3 years now with the group. I mean, has it felt comfortable right from the start? It seemed like it's always been a great pair.
It started out really well in terms of training. I molded right into the training and Pete Ray's coaching philosophy. I'm kind of a strength runner, so his workouts and the long runs and the more aerobic-based type of training really fit my style of running. It took a little bit longer for me to kind of get used to the living there up in the mountains and the woods with not as much to do or to think about besides running. You know, in school, I worked really hard on engineering, and it was kind of weird for me to come to the woods and kind of turn my brain off and not have to do all those problem sets and math and physics all the time. And suddenly, just your day is literally waking up, running, and eating and sleeping. But I've gotten used to it since then, and I've kind of developed a lot of different hobbies like woodworking and hiking and doing a lot of reading, blogging, and everything. So it's helped me kind of with the transition mentally as well.
What happens when the internet goes out in Blowing Rock?
When the internet goes out in Blowing Rock, so that's a funny story, actually. There's one service provider in our little valley that we live in. It's AT&T, and I think they're trying to force us out. And they said if we cancel our subscription, then we can't come back. So literally, we're kind of hanging by a thread with AT&T. In fact, someone tried to sabotage the valley and clip the incoming wire for the service at the head of the valley. So that was an interesting. We're still trying to figure out who did that. We have a few suspects, chiefly ISIS, probably one of the Oregon Distance Project group members who might be involved in trying to sabotage Zap.
But aside from that, I mean, you mentioned your engineering focus while you're in school. I mean, is that something down the road you definitely want to get right back into? And how do you keep from getting rusty with your engineering stuff?
It's definitely something I want to get back into. The dream would be actually to start my own company. I would love to be an entrepreneur, develop some of the ideas that I have swirling around in my head over the years, you know, in robotics and in aerospace and in material science. But and how I, you know, how I keep myself from getting too rusty. I try to keep up with the current technology, you know, what's going on in space, what's going on in the defense and aerospace industry. And I try to tinker with, you know, electronics here and there a little bit as part of one of my hobbies. So, you know, keep my mind on it and do a lot of reading and just journals and stuff.
How much of it did you do at Texas? I mean, you definitely did it 4 years at Princeton. And then you went back, you went to grad school at Texas for a little bit.
Yep.
And you made sure to finish, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I finished my master's degree at Texas. It was a 3-semester degree in aerospace. And I worked a lot on satellites, in the field of satellites. So I definitely kept it up there. But it's been, I guess, a little over a year and a half since Texas. So it's been just pure running since then.
So you've raced distances everything from 815 all the way through 15K on the road.
Yep.
So at USA's this year, you raced 1500.
Mm-hmm.
What's kind of like the benefit of going that far into distance? Because, I mean, you could always dip into the 5K at USA's.
Yeah, 5K is kind of the event that we have pegged as my ideal event, for sure. But, you know, in terms of running all the way up to 15K, and in fact, I also ran the 12K cross-country U.S. championships this year. And we kind of decided in the fall that I was going to try to do a little more cross-country, you know, do the 12K up in Colorado, do Bupa in Scotland. Kind of the idea being develop a big aerobic base, not even run indoor, just do cross-country and longer road races and really get really strong throughout December, January, February, and March. And I think it's paid off. I think we're really going to see some of the benefits here in actually the next couple races in Belgium, in fact, because some of those shorter races, you know, if you can get to a lap to go more aerobic than the guy next to you, you have a better shot at kicking against him. Because everyone, you know, here can go out on the track and run a 53 or 52 second quarter in practice. It's just, can you do that with one lap to go after you've already run 11 and a half? And it comes down to who's the most aerobic. And sort of that cross-country and long road race mentality earlier in the season is what is behind that, hopefully.
Yeah. You would love to see cross-country be an Olympic sport down the road?
Oh, that'd be awesome. In fact, I think they're actually talking about it being perhaps a winter Olympic sport,
right,
which would be pretty darn cool. I'm from Wisconsin, and I've done some racing in the snow, and I think I could... I'm definitely a cold-weather runner. You know, I raced that Jacksonville 15K and almost got heat exhaustion. But I would definitely enjoy, you know, trying to make an Olympic team in cross-country, and I'm sure they would do a pretty good job of it at the Olympics. It would be a lot of fun.
Someone who has success over cross-country and then now on the track, chasing the standard at Houston, mm-hmm. Ben True, what is it about him that you particularly kind of like, you know, about his skill set and just kind of that, he seems to have that blue-collar mentality as well as you guys at Zap.
Yeah, he's definitely a blue-collar runner. Like, you hear the stories of him training up there, you know, kind of like lumberjack style, coaching himself and, you know, really only one or two other training partners most of the time and just going out and hammering runs. You know, you hear about his insane workouts and, you know, that's really, you know, it's inspiring because, you know, a lot of the best runners in the world are Africans and they're small, tiny little guys. And, you know, Ben True is not a tiny guy. He's not a huge guy, but he's definitely, an inspiration to a guy like me who's, you know, a little bit on the bigger side of runners. And to see a guy be able to run 13:02, you know, like that, I'm like, well, heck, I can do that too. You know, I can break 13. He can break 13. Like, so he's a good example. Just an aerobic beast, and I kind of look up to him for that too.
Your own 5K aspirations for Houston. I mean, what are kind of the goals there?
Goals. Well, the Olympic trials window is open, so that's obviously the first goal. You know, it would be great to break our Zap Fitness record of 13:27. That record's getting a little old by Thomas Morgan. It's time to break that thing. So hopefully my teammate George Alex and I could take that down. And from there, you know, you want to get the Olympic standard. That'd be the next thing. So, you know, I'm feeling really good, and I think a pretty big breakthrough is imminent here at Houston.
Is there a little time bonus in terms of your contract with Zap and all that to break this 5K record?
Oh yeah, there's time bonuses with Zap. So those are definitely in there. They're kind of lodged in between the Olympic trials and the Olympic time. But really, the main bonus I'm looking for is last night I talked to Pete, my coach, on FaceTime, and he said, "If you do your victory lap with your race shorts on your head and some half tights, and you do one lap, I'll give you $50. So that's probably what I'm going to go after, depending on if the race goes well or not.
Zap's undergoing some changes right now, right? Isn't the house and all that changing right now?
Yeah, we're building. We're actually going to be finishing up a brand new house. When I get home from Belgium, it should actually be pretty much livable. We're going to have 4 bedrooms up there. It's a really nice house, just right above the Zap facility there on the hill. Within a 200-meter walk of the Zap campus. And the house that I currently live in is about 60 years old. They're going to tear that thing down, get the asbestos out of it first, because it was before those codes were even around. They're going to, you know, plow that into a hole, and they're going to build another new house on top of that one. So we're going to have two new houses for Zap. We're going to have plenty of great room for athletes to stay in. So it's going to be really nice, and we're really excited about that.
It seems like not a lot of people know about it. I mean, mm-hmm. the Zap and the Reebok, the whole setup that they have. Yeah. I mean, what's the coolest part of the whole thing?
The coolest part of the whole thing about Zap is definitely kind of a three-tier business model that we have. We have adult fitness, adult running camps throughout the summer, and that's kind of one-third of our, you know, revenue. People come in, I think we have five or six camps throughout the year, and we have anywhere between 20 and 26 adults come for 3 to 7 days, and they stay, and they go on runs. We have guest speakers come in, like Bill Rogers has been coming year after year, Andy Burfoot, pretty big names in the running world, especially the marathoning world. And so that's really cool. And our coaches and founders, Zico Ray and Pete Ray, and our assistant coach, Ryan Wardberg, give talks on nutrition and running psychology and form analysis and shoes. So that's those camps are kind of one third. And the other third is our donor base, which a lot of the people who go to the camps end up becoming donors for Zap. We're a nonprofit organization. So, and then the other tier is Reebok itself. And Reebok helps us a lot. They give us all of our equipment, and we love the shoes they give us. And they give us our, you know, our travel money. So it's because of Reebok that we're able to come to all these meets over here in Europe, and then the ones in California as well. I think the a lot of the groups around the United States, they reach out to the community, and I think we do a really good job of bringing the running community to us through our camps. We just have a lot of awesome fans who have been at our camps and still follow the elite athletes through our blogs and through social media, and it's just a really cool little, like, community that Zap's formed, and I think that's unique within the U.S. clubs.
It seems like it's just that way down in the South, just because of, I mean, I watched the Sir Walter Myler race last year. You were part of that race.
That's correct.
What was so special about that? I mean, I just keep asking what was so special. I mean, there just seems like there's just a bunch of cool things that not too many people have any hear about. If they only watch, let's say, the Diamond Leagues and, like, all the big meets, there's a lot of cool stuff that's below the surface.
Sir Walter was awesome because I think last year was its only officially its second year.
Right.
The first year, I think it was just one guy, Sandy Roberts, trying to break four. And then all of a sudden the second year you have an elite field with prize money. You have an after party. You have people staying with host families. You have the entire running community of Raleigh coming out and getting right into lane 3 and 4 watching the race. So it was really cool to see that kind of acceleration and meet growth, and I'm really excited to see what happens this year. They're really good at promoting. They're going to do, this summer they're doing something called Pop-Up Miles. It's kind of a mile series that allows you to qualify for the championship, which is at the actual Sir Walter race on August 7th. I'm really excited for the North Carolina versus the USA little promotion. There's a team of guys and girls who are associated with North Carolina, either from there or train there, and we're going to take on the rest of the field who are from around the country. So that's going to be really cool.
How'd you finish last year? I mean, what was the overall feeling after the race?
I think I ran 4:01 last year, and I was like maybe fifth or sixth or so.
That's when Ford made that big push.
That's when Ford broke four for the first time and did a really good job, and we were all really happy for him because I think he had run within four, you know, within a couple hundredths of four
several times.
So it was, you know, it was kind of coming off of my European season last year, and I was feeling good, but it was kind of a little bit of a slight disappointment of a race. It would have been nice to break four and finish a little higher. But those things happen, and I was just really happy to be a part of that awesome meet that they put together, and I'm really excited to do again this year. And this year I'm going to come out guns blazing and get a little bit of retribution out there on the track, try to win the thing.
When's your break? Because it seems like you race, you go right into cross country right after the track season, and then your Sir Walter's in early August. Is it just those last couple weeks of August?
Most likely, my real break, 2 week break, won't even happen until after CVS 5K Road Championships in September. The plan is to take it all the way to there. We'll probably do a small little downswing of 4 or 5 days after sometime in August, just to kind of regroup mentally. Not we won't do a workout for 5 days and just kind of jog, but there won't be any real 2 week totally off until September. So the idea is to kind of bring track shape all the way through that CVS 5K Road Championships.
World indoors, is that kind of and like the US Championship indoor season, is that kind of in the fold? I mean, you praise the benefit of cross country for this year.
In my mind right now, I kind of want to wait and see. I want to see how this next couple of races pans out, and we'll see how like that sort of cross country road race mentality worked this past winter. Because like the effects are still in the legs right now, and they're coming out in the next couple of weeks. So I want to wait and see if that works, and then we'll make a decision whether we're going to do something similar to this past year, run cross country, run the 15K, run the things like that, or do an indoor season. Because you're right, it is a championship year, and it would be awesome to make that team.
You're running in a parking lot, I think, in a couple
Yeah, I am.
of
I'm running on Labor Day. There's a mall parking lot mile in Atlanta, and I hope the start time is very early because that sounds really hot. But it's going to be fun. I think it's the first year that they're putting on this little race, and I got invited to it. So I'm always happy to have race directors reach out and invite me to meets, and I'm always grateful for them supporting my season. So I'm looking forward to that one too. Yeah.
We went for a run in Milwaukee, and I think you kind of shared an idea that you have. You want to, like, this is your chance right now to kind of
Oh
pitch it.
yeah.
If there's anyone out there listening who would have some power in Wisconsin to make it happen, what's your vision for a mile in Milwaukee or just in Wisconsin?
Yeah, Wisconsinites, Milwaukeeans, southeastern Wisconsinites, listen up. I have this idea for the Bayview Mile. We could call it the Milwaukee Mile, but that might conflict with the Speedway. But the Bayview Mile, it's a race done on the pavement on Kinnickinnick Avenue in Bayview, which is the south side of Milwaukee. And it's the road down there is perfect. It's paved, it would be a slightly downhill mile. It goes past some of the coolest shops, restaurants, and stores in Milwaukee, and I just know that my home neighborhood of Bayview would turn out for that. I'd love to, if I ever did got into race directing, I would love to do that. Bring in some elites, throw out some prize money, maybe have one of those, half mile bonuses, have bands playing every quarter mile. Have a festival at the finish line, everything like that. Of course, have beer because it's Milwaukee. You gotta have the beer. So yeah, that's kind of my dream. I would love to do that. It'd be a lot of fun. The Bayview Mile.
How's it compared to the Wisco Mile in like in terms of, 'cause I feel like there's a ton of excitement around that.
Yeah, the Wisco Mile is a really cool event as well. That's one. That's
That's
a
on the
mile
track.
high held on a high school track back in Milwaukee. It was started. When I was in high school, and that was where my high school personal best in the mile is from, and it's literally just a high school coach wanted to give Wisconsin high schoolers another chance at a mile personal best after the state meet, and he put it together, and now I think there's upwards of 400 or 500 athletes coming to that meet every year, all the way from little kids to Masters runners trying to run PBs in the mile. So that's an awesome event, and it's proof that there's a huge running community in southeastern Wisconsin. And sometimes I miss it, because I've been training in New Jersey and Texas and now North Carolina, and I miss the running scene in Milwaukee because it's a rich one. But I really hope I can return sometime and be it in coaching or race directing or just being in the community in Milwaukee would be a really cool thing to do.
So you haven't raced the Wisco Mile in a couple of years?
No, I raced it this year.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, I raced it just a month ago. I won the race in 401. It was I think the two guys behind me both got 4 or 5 second PRs, yeah. So that was really nice. We're going to get under 4 minutes. I think the, you know, Selinski and Tegenkamp are the only two to ever break 4 on Wisconsin soil. So Tegenkamp has the soil record officially. So someday I'm going to, you know, return and get that sucker, knock it out.
So I'm trying to think, your ties to Wisconsin, I mean, how far back, I mean, you're from there, what's your favorite part about everything? About Wisconsin, the running, I mean, you seem to have all packaged it all together right now.
Yeah, thing I like about Wisconsin is, you know, and you'll hear this from anyone from outside the state is, you know, people in Wisconsin are laid back, they're very nice, you know, they're very hospitable, like, and everyone knows about Packers fans, and I think that kind of speaks to it as well. It's just it's a very well-connected state with a lot of, like, heritage, and I guess I like Milwaukee specifically a lot just because there's a lot of good, you know, ethnic heritage, a lot of different people from different backgrounds, and it comes out in all the, you know, the restaurants and the festivals in the summer. The food, the drinks, just the life that's, you know, thriving in Milwaukee right now. And it's actually gotten even better in the last 8 years. You know, since I left for college, I come home every time and I'm like, man, these guys are taking over my neighborhood. There's this really cool restaurant here. There's this tattoo parlor here. There's this, you know, fancy froyo place there. You know, it's, and the coffee shops, of course, have taken over just like everywhere else. But yeah, and I'm just really proud that my city and my state are, you know, developing and advancing and becoming like really cool place to really cool destination for people from outside the state.
How's the beer compare to Belgium? and what you can drink while you're out here?
yeah. Well, we don't try to drink too much while we're here because we're trying to run fast. Yeah. But sometimes after a race, we might indulge a little bit. I will say, I think it's, I don't drink Stella Artois too much in the States. Here you drink it because it's just like cheap like water. and it definitely does taste a little different here.
It's cheaper than water, yeah.
It's cheaper than water, literally. You go to a restaurant and you can get Stella for much less than water. But yeah, I mean, I love our, you know, home breweries in Milwaukee, especially Lakefront Brewery.
Yeah.
Lakefront IPA, that stuff is great. You don't get that type of beer here in Belgium. It's a lot of wheat beers. And, you know, I really enjoyed actually going to Ireland last week and racing in the Cork 3K and sampling some Guinness right in Dublin where it's made and some Murphy's Irish Stout right in Cork where that's made. And, boy, they're different than the U.S. for sure. You know, they taste great there.
You mentioned some of these European races. 342 in Korczyk.
Yep.
Getting a little closer to that 3:39 PR.
Yep.
I mean, how far does it feel? I mean, in terms of, is it there? Do you feel the PR coming?
I feel a PR coming, especially in Kortrijk, where there was a large field, and the first 100 meters was literally a sprint, and I should have been ready for it. I should have gotten out a little harder, but unfortunately, I was probably in the back third of the race.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you know, you're running 59s, it's kind of difficult to move up to the front. And I ended up getting up to the front. I ended up getting up into third place with 200 to go. But, you know, I ran probably 1,540 meters just based on how much I was in lane two. And I slammed on the brakes probably 4 times and sped up probably 5 times. So, you know, that race is probably worth a few seconds faster than 3:42, just, you know, subjectively. And the fact that I was able to use those moves, you know, in a fast race like that, you know, that bodes well for something like a 5K, for my strength and for my kind of gear shifting.
Is there going to be another 1500 coming up pretty soon for you, or?
You know, I hope so, Chris. Right now we have me entered in the 5K and the 1500 in Ninove, which is a Belgian meet on August 1st. So if I knock one out of the park here in Houston on Saturday, we'll probably do the 1500 in Ninove and get after that, that 1500 PR and the Olympic trial standard at the 1500.
Did you know at the time that your 1359 was a world lead back in February on the road?
Really?
Yeah, you were a world leader for a little bit.
For 2015?
Yep.
I did not know that. That's funny. Well, that's cool to know, I guess.
Yeah, I'm just looking through some of your stats here. So the big one, another big one was Peyton Jordan.
Yeah.
How does that feel? I mean, in comparison to some of these other races, it's always a fast one there.
Yeah, Peyton Jordan this year, I wasn't quite ready, based on the result there. I wasn't quite ready to, you know, go under 13:30 yet. You get into these races and, they run 65 to 66, and then the pace kind of slacks after 3K. It's a very typical thing that happens in a lot of these races that are paced towards the A standard, 13:32 for the U.S. So that kind of happened again, and, you know, I wasn't as sharp, so I wasn't able to kick too hard off of that pace. So I ended up, you know, running 13:42. And Peyton Jordan, it's always a good race. But for me, I think it takes a few good hard races to actually get into race sharpness. I think some people can just work out really well and then just go run a 5K and knock it out of the park. I think for me, I need a 5K or two and some 1500s to kind of get that sharpness and that feeling good down for that last 2K of pain that you have to push through. So hopefully that will show through here in the next couple weeks.
What is it about Houston's track? I mean, I've heard everyone praising it. Yeah. What is it that makes it feel good?
Well, you know, I've always kind of like turned up my eyebrows at people when people talk about fast tracks. I think it's really just the meat and the people that come to the tracks that make it fast. You know, objectively, there could be a track in the middle of nowhere, Wyoming, that's objectively fast, but no one knows about it because no one's ever run fast there. So I think Houston just has this really good tradition of, a great meet, KBC knocked, and people come there, they run 13:33, 32 in the 15, the guys knocking on the door of sub 13 in the 5. So it is a really nice track and it's a really good atmosphere, and I think Belgium has a good climate most summers for it. It's usually low 60s, high 50s for the 5K there, and that's what makes it fast in my opinion. Just a good atmosphere and a lot of good guys.
So let's lay it out. So we've got Houston this week.
Yep.
After that is?
The Morton Games, right, in Ireland. I'll run a 3K. And then a 5K or a 1500 in Ninove, Belgium on August 1st. And I'll fly back to the States, Sir Walter Miler on August 7th. Have the Mall Mile on Labor Day in Atlanta. And then CVS 5K up in Providence, Rhode Island on September 22nd or 21st. I'm not really sure of the exact date. Right around there.
All right. Well, there you have it. Well, we wish you the best of luck, Joe.
Thanks, Chris.
And we'll catch you in Houston.
Thanks for having me.
If you want more on Joe Stillen, check out his blog, thinkfastweightrun.blogspot.com. We'll be bringing on more guests throughout the week here in Leuven. Stay tuned for more on the Running Our Mouths podcast.